Hello, fellow nerds, and welcome to another episode of the Modern Health Nerd Podcast, where every week we bring you fascinating conversations with the movers, shakers, and innovators in food, health, agriculture, and everywhere in between. I'm your host, Teresa Sam Houghton, Chief Nerd at the Modern Health Nerd. Today, I talk with Arman Anaturk. Arman is the co-founder of FoodHack, a community-driven media and events platform for the food and food tech industry. FoodHack started as a community of meetups for startup founders who wanted to break into the food and food tech space, but didn't really have the connections that they needed to be able to get funding and to start to scale. After the pandemic hit, they shifted a little bit more to an online format, which we talk about in the episode. So we also talk about FoodHack's mission, as well as the biggest struggles for startups who are trying to position and scale in the plant-based space. We also touch a little bit on the controversial subject of whether or not big brands should be dipping their toes into the plant-based and food tech waters by supporting or acquiring some of these startups. And then, of course, there's the all-important piece of consumer education and its role in transforming the food system. I really enjoy talking to Arman. He's got his finger on the pulse of the food and food tech industry, and he's really into what's going on in the plant-based space. I hope you can get a lot of valuable information out of our conversation. If you like it, please give us a rating and review and subscribe to our podcast on Apple or your favorite podcast platform. Now, my conversation with Arman Anaturk. Well, hi, Arman. Welcome to the podcast. I am so glad that you're able to join me today.
A pleasure to be here. Excited to kick off.
So what is it that you do at FoodHack and how did you get into it? Let us know a little bit about you and your operation there and your publication, everything that you are doing to contribute to what's going on in food right now.
FoodHack started around 4 years ago, but more so as a side project. We have an agency which runs in the food and science field, where we work on marketing, communication, strategy for clients, mostly corporates, academia, and any company operating in the food and science field. And when we first arrived to Switzerland, myself and my co-founder, what we found is that we were trying to run this agency, but we didn't have any contacts in the food sector. So we thought, how can we get involved? How can we kind of build a network very quickly in a way that also highlights our skill sets, you know, marketing, branding, strategy, communications. And that kind of gave birth to FoodHack, a two-day food hackathon that brought together participants from the field of entrepreneurship, startups, corporate sector, the investment world, to come together and work on ideas to reduce food waste and emissions. So this one-off hackathon was really just meant to be a way for us to grow our network very quickly with an audience that we were interested in, food and food tech. Off of the back of that, we actually realized that there was a pretty big opportunity to get more involved with the food entrepreneurship community, especially here in Switzerland. So we started doing regular food hack meetups. So we shifted from hackathons to meetups. And that was really the beginning of FoodHack as it is today. Now we've grown into a licensing model of 18 meetups. So we have people who take the FoodHack brand and start organizing events in their city and building their food tech communities. We've expanded into 18 cities, everywhere from Zurich to London to Stockholm, and most recently, Brisbane in Australia, Mumbai in India, and a few others that were soon to be released. And on the back of that, we run a media company highlighting all the trends, insights, and startups that we find via these different hubs and contacts that we have in the industry.
So you have all of these hubs. What is the activity at a typical food hack hub look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's actually changed quite a bit ever since COVID hit. So it used to be local meetups for food entrepreneurs. The problem we identified was that all these startup events existed, you know, in fintech, in, you know, big data, in startups as general, but they weren't catering to the needs of food entrepreneurs. I think the challenges that they face in terms of sourcing, packaging, partnerships, growth, funding are all so unique to the food and food tech sector that those needs weren't being met at the broader meetups. So we decided to launch something really specific to helping entrepreneurs find inspiration, talk about the challenges, get together, find potential founders and partners and colleagues, And that was the original idea of the Food Hack Meetups. What we normally do is we invite a few speakers from the industry. They come and talk about how they grew their business and their advice to others in the room. And then we do a potluck dinner where everyone can come along and share the food or beverage that they're working on. So it was a great way to discover new and upcoming startups in the area. And then we finish off with a 30-second pitch where every entrepreneur can come together and pitch their business in front of the audience to get some, you know, free coverage in front of everyone. That was the format that we had in place for offline meetups. But ever since COVID happened, we've started shifting more and more towards building online communities. So a good example is that the London chapter, they have about 600 members on their London Food Hack Facebook group, where every day there's people asking questions like, how can I find a packaging supplier for my business? Where should I go for funding? Who can help move some boxes today? How can I sell 20 kg of macadamia nuts in the next 24 hours? So all these kind of questions are asked between the local food entrepreneurs. And that's what we're trying to build today during COVID, the local communities that can, where entrepreneurs can come and help one another, and also a few meetups dotted around the year.
It sounds almost like you've benefited in some ways from the COVID thing, because now instead of just having one meetup once in a while, you have like places where people can go and get their questions answered and network all of the time. I see a growth in that too now, especially like with LinkedIn, and there's a lot with Slack communities. I'm interested in knowing what brands or companies have you seen come out of this that have really taken hold, or what ones are starting to come out of some of these that you're excited about?
Yeah, I'll avoid naming specific brands just because I don't want to favor one more than the other. But in terms of categories, you know, obviously plant-based has been a massive boom in the past few years. We've seen it from our meetups, how the shift has happened in new product development and new companies in the plant-based sector. Another category that's, I think, really fast growing that we're especially seeing at our meetups is anything to do with functional foods, more so right now due to COVID. So companies that are making better for you brands, which incorporate anything from helping you sleep better to helping you start the day better. And this is a massive category that we're seeing more and more new product development in. Cell-based companies, it's really interesting to see this space grow and the type of companies that are coming out from the cultured meat space. And then probably other categories, you know, there's fungi-based companies, which I'm seeing a few more pop in here and there. Algae is a massive one. And then there's just brands and businesses that are working on bringing better for you, more nutritious foods. I think that's the biggest category that we see today, the better for you, more nutritious products, and the companies that are innovating on the different models, where it's subscription service, D2C, you know, shifting towards something more like a meal kit provider, or trying to build in a bit of personalized nutrition into their offer so that consumers have something tailored to them.
I'm seeing a lot in the better for you categories as well, as I'm watching the trends that you guys put out. I'm watching the trends over at other places like Green Queen Media. And just as all of this comes out, it really seems like people want to be able to support their health, but at the same time, they don't want to move entirely away from comfort foods. And as a former health coach, I kind of have a half and half opinion on that. But with everything that's been going on, I don't suppose I can blame somebody for wanting to be able to eat like a chocolate bar that also happens to have benefits like medicinal mushrooms or something. And I'm super excited about the fungi category too. So what really got you interested in digging enough into food to be putting out the media now that you're putting out with the Food Hack publications and the emails and everything that you're doing? And you have the Food Hack Plus too. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
The reason why I started getting into it is actually just because I was trying to learn more about food and food tech. After that first hackathon, I realized that I was extremely uneducated about the sustainable food space. And the meetups were just a great way for us to really develop our knowledge in the space, speak with founders, speak with corporates, speak with investors who are actively contributing to this category, and just learn more. So the main thing was that I found all the existing publishers at the time, or all the existing groups at the time, were very isolating in that you had to be a food expert or professional to get into them or to understand the content that they were producing. And so I started making a newsletter, a weekly newsletter, where I was essentially learning the information coming from these different outlets, and summarizing them into what I thought were digestible reports or digestible snippets that I think were easier to consume. And that newsletter just started taking off. I mean, people were looking and seeking for a way to get into the food industry without having to have all this background knowledge about what's going on. And you know, these are outsiders who didn't study food tech or come from a completely different industry and now want to do something in food. So that's what it's always been about. It's been about making it easier to understand, making it easier to digest. And as I've been learning through the process of gathering information about the food tech space and simmering it down to the essentials, I think other people have caught on to that and been like, that's interesting. Let's follow along. And that's really been our secret sauce in the growth of food hack.
Now, you mentioned secret sauce. You guys have a podcast associated with food hack of that name, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The secret sauce. It's a fun name for just finding more about founders and entrepreneurs in this space and what's really makes them special and what makes their business grow.
And so I'll drop a link to that in the show notes if people want to check it out. It's always fun to hear conversations with people who are founding brands, who are supporting brands, and it helps you to, again, get that digestible information that keep you on top of the food trends. So how would you say that all of this that you're doing is supporting this transition that we're now seeing in the food landscape? You mentioned going for functional, you mentioned going for better for you brands, and of course the plant-based, and the one that has me really excited is the fungal-based too. All of this rolling along, how is what you're doing at Food Hack really moving that forward?
Yeah, I love that question because we're always thinking about how are we actually creating impact. I think it's the one thing that, you know, keeps me up at night thinking, is what we're doing valuable to the audience? And if not, how can we change it so that it is valuable? I think the main thing is that providing this neutral, safe space where food entrepreneurs can get together and find relevant contacts or talk openly about their business, hear from the challenges and the failures of other companies, and understand that growing a startup, especially growing a food and food tech startup, is difficult. And you should feel free to talk about openly about your problems and your challenges. And Food Hack provides that. I think what makes us special is that we're an independent organization. So we're self-funded. There's no main financial backers behind us except for ourselves. And that allows us to have the freedom and the safe space, which I think entrepreneurs like. You know, another benefit I think is just the way we're making knowledge. And I really look at companies like The Hustle or Robin Hood Snacks or Axios. They're making knowledge far easier to digest for the everyday passerby. So we're not trying to speak to the experts of the industry. We're trying to speak to people who are typically outsiders and who might want to break into the food and food tech space, but feel a little bit put off by all the technicalities and complexities that the space has. So just making it more digestible and easier to get into, I think will help more entrepreneurs come into the space and work on next generation products and solutions for the industry.
So you're lowering that barrier to entry and providing that information and those contacts so that whoever the entrepreneurs are can impact the food system in the way that they have a vision.
Exactly. That's a perfect summary for it. I should hire you for marketing.
Now, you're talking about the challenges and everything that entrepreneurs are facing, especially in the food sector. What are the biggest challenges that you see, like, again and again, that people are asking about and facing, particularly now that things like plant-based are taking off and the market's getting more crowded?
I think the main thing is positioning. That's one thing I've seen companies struggle with in the past. So how should I position myself in the market to be different from the other companies in the space? Or how should I position myself to win over mainstream consumers? I think that's something that plant-based companies, and especially in the future when it comes to cultured meat startups, are going to struggle with quite a bit into winning over the mainstream audience. And there, what we're trying to do is highlight the best brands that we see doing that, and then break down why we think they're doing a good job and what other companies can take inspiration from. Another one would probably be lack of funding. So even though the space is booming in terms of funding, I mean, last year, I can't remember, the first 6 months of the year had more total funding than the entirety of 2019. So there's clearly a lot of money going into the space, but I think that there's still a preference for companies that are coming from, you know, Stanford grads or people who have a background that's more traditional, and the untraditional founders are still getting left behind. So just opening up funding and making it easier so that these companies that do have a lot of promise, but maybe are often overlooked, can still get access to the same funding as the big and bright opportunities that everyone knows and loves. So I think funding and marketing are two main ones that I think need to be worked on a bit more in this space.
I definitely agree with you on the marketing thing. I'm looking into the plant-based space and working with people who are in like health and functional and everything. And I look at the brands and some of them have it and some of them don't have the time. They just, like you said, you've got an entrepreneur or just like a founder and maybe a couple of people and they're doing it all. And it sounds like Food Hack is making it a lot easier to do it all and possibly even making it easier to find people to help out in these various areas so that it's not just like constantly on this hamster wheel of just trying to stay one step ahead of the crazy.
Exactly. You know, we really don't see ourselves as the builder of companies. We see ourselves as the router. So we work with different partners, you know, from ProVeg Incubator to Mass Challenge to the guys at Start Life. And we just channel them towards where we think would be best for them in order to grow their business. And if that's funding, if that's knowledge, if that's network, we hope to be the space to provide that via Food Hack. But what's interesting is the marketing of alternative protein companies and plant-based companies. We really can't expect founders to do it all. You know, they're already coming in with product development and new technologies. We can't then expect them to also, from the get-go, have the marketing and the branding expertise. Some teams do, and those are the teams that we typically see succeed the most. But I think there's a lot of space to bring in more marketing expertise from other industries and have them working for startups in this space. Because I think that that sector is going to be huge and we're going to see more and more service providers catering specifically for plant-based alternative protein and in the future, cultured meat startups.
I'm not surprised really with the popularity of it. And speaking of popularity, you also do a thing at Food Hack where you actually feature brands and products and you have people upvote them and you will put out in your newsletter like the top three or whatever of the week. And I also see you do a lot of roundups on places like LinkedIn and in your newsletter of a top 10 list of places from different countries around the world. What got you started with that, and how do people get in on that if they want to be listed and try to get some visibility?
Yeah, I love lists. I'm someone who has a very short attention span, so anything to do with top 10, top 3, whatever it is, I just find it's extremely valuable. And because I think like that, I think there's a lot of other people out there who probably like these short listicle formats. Well, I've seen them perform very well on LinkedIn. I've seen them perform very well on our blog. And the reason why we started Discovery is because of COVID, because of the fact that we were unable to run our events in person. We had a slowdown in the number of events we were organizing, and our events were really the way that we were promoting the different startups in our network. So we thought, you know, what can we do in the meantime while this blows over to find a way to promote the startups? And that's where the Discovery came from. Full transparency, it is a knockoff of Product Hunt, but Product Hunt for the food and food tech space. We heavily got inspired by these guys, and we just built something which we thought would be valuable to the industry. So every week, like you said, we highlight 9 different startups across the industry globally. So we have a wide mix of companies from all around the world. And how companies can apply is they just go onto our website. There's a little button on the side that says apply with your company. And then every week our scouts in Food Hack look through the different companies and post these onto the Discovery board. And give them a little bit of a marketing boost via our different channels, newsletter, website, social.
So whether you are running a plant-based or food company or functional food or any of these categories, or you're looking for new products and companies to try out, this is the place to go. It really is like Product Hunt for food. And if you're a foodie like I am, that can actually become a deliciously dangerous rabbit hole after a while.
Hey, tell me about it. I've ordered so many products off of there. I just love finding new things. And the crazy thing is every week we find something new. It's like there's no shortage of products and interesting companies in this space.
Do you have any favorite categories that you see among those you've seen exploding or that you've seen on the Food Hack Discovery or any particular products that you think are really going to be up and coming that maybe haven't hit the spotlight yet?
Yeah, I think there's one that everyone knows the name of, Impact Snacks. So Corey from Impact Snacks. He's working on something really interesting with the carbon neutral products. And I think that this whole carbon friendly food sector is going to take off. I think it's not this year, maybe not next year, but in the following few years, as consumers become more aware of the environmental effect of what they're eating, they will look to brands that contribute to a more sustainable future as a whole. And brands like Impact Snacks are a great example. What we're featuring a lot of these days are plant-based companies. There's so many new companies in the plant-based space. Every week we have about 6 different companies on the board from all across the globe. Let's say carbon negative, let's go that far. Plant-based companies, functional foods are all over the place. The good example is Off-Limits cereal. It's a cereal that has functional benefits within it to either help you get energized for your day in one bowl of cereal, or the other one to calm down before the evening and get a bit of relaxing in it. So I love these kind of products. Like we were talking about, functional foods is just such an interesting category. And if you can get an added benefit of, boosting your immune system or adding focus to yourself during the day just from drinking a bottle of juice, I'm all for it.
My brain is totally focused on things like medicinal mushrooms right now. I'm actually planning like a mushroom month for this spring on the podcast because there's so much going on with that there. Talk about your functional. I mean, morning to evening. So that's one place where I'm excited too, is really that functional thing. And having been a health coach, I'm thinking this category needs to have exploded a long time.
Absolutely. I think we're only scratching the surface for mushrooms. And I think there's so much more to be done. I remember I was speaking to David from Moonshot Collaborative, and he was telling me that we use in the US, we only use one type of mushroom, predominantly one type of mushroom. Whereas in China, they have, I don't know how many, so I'm going to misquote him, but they have a lot more mushrooms that use on a regular basis. So there's so much more to be done in this space when we start exploring all the different variations of mushrooms and their added benefits for consumers.
And that's why I go to the Asian market to get my mushrooms.
that's the trick right there.
So with all of this going on, what do you feel we need to have as our next big focus as we push forward into the future of food? You mentioned a ton of stuff like the carbon and the plant-based. In your opinion, what's the biggest place we need to be looking?
In terms of what will create the most impact or where I think we could be developing further?
Both, really. I mean, they're both going to move the needle. So they're both really important.
Yeah, I think one thing that's very positive that we're seeing is the number of new companies that are launching in the, better for you, more sustainable, better for the planet, better for the people category. So that's one of the big problems that we had a few years back. Everything was run by just a handful of companies that really control the market. And now we're starting to see diversification of products, diversification of offers and companies that you can buy from, so that you can pick and choose based on your personal values, what you need for your daily nutritional needs, or your local area, which is another important category that we should all be looking into. So I think the more companies that come into this space, the better this entire category will get. The small brands put pressure on the big food companies to also innovate and stay ahead of the curve. And up until before we had all this diversification of products coming in, big food didn't have to move. Big food didn't have to change. But now they do. We just put out an article about how big food is collaborating with startups. And you see there's so many deals happening across the board. And this is really great to see, because at the end of the day, one multinational in the F&B sector has the impact of, I don't know how many companies, but far more impact than a single startup or a handful of startups. One multinational changing what they do and how they do it will create an immense amount of value. And this is what I'm looking forward to, seeing how big food changes and how big food collaborates with startups.
So kind of from the ground up, like you said, putting that pressure and prompting the bigger companies to respond to what the smaller companies already see and know consumers want.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be them working on these things internally. Like we highlighted, there can be an opportunity for partnerships, for investments, for mergers and acquisitions. And there's pros and cons to this, so I don't want to go too far into it. But it just means that big food knows that they have to change and they're feeling the pressure. And they're now giving consumers a larger variety of choice in what they have versus the options that we had 5, 10 years ago.
And that's interesting because there often seems to be this kind of animosity toward or negativity against when the smaller companies do start to partner or collaborate with, or there are the acquisitions, and people don't seem to be looking at the fact that, okay, if this big brand buys this smaller brand, now this smaller brand has a lot more distribution, they have a lot more visibility, and also then the bigger brand has a reason to have a stake in this market versus them always butting heads and saying, you know, we're just gonna change this all by ourselves and we don't care what the big guys do. But you're saying that it really matters what these bigger companies are doing.
Absolutely. I love that point. I think it's one that is so difficult for startups. You know, everyone wants the best for them, but when they get to a certain size and scale, then they suddenly all of a sudden become the bad guys. And that mentality is wrong. You know, if we want these startups to grow and be profitable and, you know, change the world and change the food system, they need to get to a scale where they can do that profitably in mass so that they can reach consumers all across the globe. And so I'm all for companies getting, you know, investment from outside, getting collaborations with corporates, and maybe in the future getting acquired by a big corporate, because this is what we need to change the food system. That's not to say that companies, small startups by themselves, can't stay independent their whole lives and grow, but there is potentially a ceiling to that. We saw Beyond Meat, they created an immense amount of value by growing themselves, but then the stage came where they had to take funding from outside in order to grow. And today, you know, they did a recent collaboration with PepsiCo in order to create more plant-based snacks and drinks. This is just a natural step for them. They need the, you know, marketing and budget and distribution channels that something like PepsiCo has in order to reach the consumers and fulfill their, you know, ultimate goal of having every consumer in the world eat a, you know, Beyond Meat burger versus a traditional cow-based burger.
I think part of the problem might be that we all love the underdog story, but we don't look at the flip side of that as, like, if you stay the underdog for too long, you can't grow. You're not an underdog anymore. You just go under.
Exactly. That's a perfect way to put it. I should make a trend about that. You can't be the underdog the whole time.
But then if you grow like that and you become a, you know, a really gigantic company, then you have an underdog story. So I think that's really great, because people need to start thinking about, well, okay, if you want this brand to be around and you really want to believe in what they say, and like you said, with the marketing, if we're getting these messages out there better and people and consumers are really grasping it, which is my soapbox lately, are consumers grasping this? The more they do, I think we're also going to need to get that message out there that says, well, this is what's going to have to happen for the greatest impact.
Exactly. I mean, we saw all the whole controversy around Oatly last year getting outside capital from a VC firm, which didn't have the most sustainable portfolio up to that point. And this was such a hotly debated topic. Where we stand on this, you know, where I stand on this personally is that in order for Oatly to carry out its mission, they needed outside funding. And the amount of funding they were seeking was only feasible from a certain number of VCs. And so they took what action they thought was relevant and necessary in order to fulfill their goals and their mission. And the mission hasn't changed. They're still working on changing everyone's, you know, dairy milk into a oat-based milk. And this new funding has just allowed them to do that. But definitely there was a lot of controversy within the food tech space as a whole, the sustainability sector, and also within Food Hack. When we put this news out, we had quite a lot of people writing back saying that we shouldn't be supporting Oatly and that it was a wrong decision for us to mention them in the way that we did.
But going back to your earlier point, again, now you have Oatly who has funding from this place, and now you have a bunch of people who are like screaming sustainability. That starts to put pressure again on the people who give the funding to think, well, okay, and then maybe it trickles down to the other companies. Also, you say, like you mentioned twice, replacing the animal meat with Beyond Meat, replacing dairy milk with oat milk, the impact of that environmentally and sustainably, and we don't know all of the health implications of alt protein right now, but we certainly know the implications of dairy and versus non-dairy. This is again, we're back to the consumer education, when people really know what's going on behind the scenes, and it's great that you guys are doing that and allowing those trends and that information to come forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point that you said, and I can't tell you whether or not it was a good decision. I can just tell you what I think of the situation, and hopefully these VC firms understand that they need to diversify their portfolio and add in more sustainability-driven businesses, because that is the future. And if they don't invest into the space, they will end up losing money with their existing portfolio. One can be an optimist. I see myself as an optimist in this, and I hope that that's what they understand. And that's the reason why they're investing into companies like Oatly and others.
Yeah, it's always good to know when people are looking beyond just like the dollar signs, because I mean, you got to make a profit to keep existing, but to look beyond the dollar signs and to invest in what you really believe in, whether you're an entrepreneur launching a brand or somebody who is putting the money out there.
Yeah, you know, I think the role of startups is that they need to be the ones testing these emerging markets, because big corporates at the end of the day, they don't have the luxury to do this, because what they need to do is they need to fulfill their, you know, shareholder benefits and, you know, grow and focus on revenue and profits. Whereas these emerging categories can often be high risk and deter big food from getting involved. So startups paved the way. We saw that with Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. They paved the way for an entire category. And then once they showed, okay, this is a viable space, you know, consumers want this, more and more companies started breaking in, primarily startups that are working on plant-based nutrition. And now you were really seeing the buy-in from the entire industry, because it's been validated. It's been shown that this is a sector that will grow, and this is what consumers want. And if you're not buying into this today, then you're going to miss out when this sector is potentially the biggest thing in food.
And it's getting there. I'm watching, like I said, I'm watching the trends from across the board. So I always ask the big one, the big question, as we get closer to the end of the podcast and wrap things up. You've touched on so many different points that would contribute to this, but if you had unlimited power and unlimited resources, and you could bring about one change in our modern food system, what would it be? I've been saying to people, sky's the limit.
I think education of consumers. That is the biggest problem that I believe we face. Consumers have the power to be able to pick what foods they want in the retail space, or what foods they want companies working on, or what VC firms should add into their portfolio. But there is a miseducation in what is good for you and what is good for the planet. Personally, I never studied this when I went to school. No one told me about, you know, except for my parents, no one told me about what's good and bad to eat. I was living in the US when pizza was supposedly one of your five a day vegetables. We're so misinformed as consumers. And if everyone were to understand from very early on in the education system, what is good for you, what isn't good for you, what's good for the planet and what's not, I think growing up, we'll be making smarter and better food choices that will drastically change the food landscape and have knock-on effects into being healthier and a healthier planet.
I can't add anything to that, because I'm all about the consumer education too. I've been posting about it on LinkedIn. I'm kind of transitioning to Modern Health Nerd newsletter going in that direction. There's so much like great energy and great vision behind a lot of these startups, and there's a lot of energy and vision behind plant-based. And consumers are gravitating toward plant-based, but we need to be backtracking. Why are they choosing it? Do they understand why they're choosing it? And how much more impact would it have if people really did know why they buy organic, or why they buy local, or why they buy plant-based? I can see that as making such huge changes. And if that was something, too, that people understood from a younger age, I wonder if it wouldn't also trickle down to being able to solve problems of like food deserts, where people who maybe want to make these choices can't right now, understanding how important it is for them to have access to that. Do you see that as being a possible correlation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the more educated the consumer is, and the more educated we are about our food choices, we'll see everything from people choosing to buy products in that way to launching businesses in the space, because we still have a lot to do. And a good example of someone is Rihanna Lin, founder of Journey Foods. She identified that she was in a food desert. She had the means necessary to be able to go out and do something about it. And because she was an educated individual in terms of what's going on in the food sustainability space and had the technical prowess to be able to build something, she's added tremendous value to her community. And now in her company, Journey Foods, to shift the way that we're eating and making more nutritious foods available to the mass.
And I see a lot of that too, with the people who are doing upcycled or who are rescuing food with their companies, bringing it to these places so that people can make those choices once they have the education and be able to feed themselves and their families better. It's a great movement. I could talk about it for hours, I think.
Yeah, but you know, also startups, they have a way to go with their product. They need to make sure that by the time the consumer does go out and try their product for the first time, it needs to be a hit. And if it's not a hit, then someone who, you know, traditionally eats a lot of meat and dairy, they're not going to make the swap. You and I have been talking about this when it comes to plant-based cheese, when it comes to plant-based yogurts. There is still a way to go for the industry to improve the taste and, you know, arguably the nutritional benefits of plant-based foods or more sustainable foods, and especially price as well. You know, let's not miss that out. These products tend to be on average more expensive than the non-plant-based options out there. So there's still a few different factors that need to go into improving the future of plant-based 3.0, let's say, not 2.0. I think we've skipped that already. So that consumers, when they do have those products from day one, they are fans and they will buy that product again.
Agreed. I've watched the plant-based cheese category grow over the last decade or so, and I remember those earlier plant-based cheeses, and there's some good stuff going on, especially in that sector. Amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Again, thank you for being on the podcast and for doing what you're doing at Food Hack to allow people to start iterating their products and to connect with who they need to connect with. How can people find you, get more information, whether they want to get information from the consumer end or get involved from the business end if they have a product or they're an entrepreneur and they want to be able to take advantage of what you've got at Food Hack?
I love discovering new products and entrepreneurs in this space. So my LinkedIn is open. You know, reach out to me, just Armin Anaturk on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to reach me. And then in terms of getting your product featured, you know, I'd love to see more diversity of products on there from all around the globe. So just head to foodhack.global, get your product on there, and we'll boost it through our channels. So LinkedIn, Food Hack's website, and then my personal email, which is armin@foodhack.global. Send me an email there. It tends to take me a while to reply, but I'll get back to you.
And you can check out the show notes to find all of those links and all of that information. One thing, do not go to Food Hack Discovery if you are hungry. That could be dangerous.
This job is so difficult. I'm not complaining about it, but you get so hungry during the day. And I think that's it's a pro, but it's also a con. I mean, I'm constantly hungry at work.
That's why I try not to like look at like food brands on Instagram when I'm hungry either. So it's like, it could be a rabbit hole for hours and hours just looking at the food. But again, thank you for being on the podcast. And I look forward to seeing more great brands come through the Food Hack Discovery and all of your hubs.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Another big thanks to Armand for being on the podcast and giving us a little window into what he's seen in the food tech, and plant-based spaces as he's running Food Hack. If you want to catch some more insights, you can join Armand and Sonali from Green Queen Media every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern on Clubhouse in their new food media chat. So if you're on the Clubhouse app, that's another way to get some fantastic insights into what's happening in all of these areas in food. And if you just want a really great newsletter in your inbox every week, head over to foodhack.global and subscribe. Fantastic insights. Full disclosure, one of the few newsletters in this space that I actually read the entirety of when it shows up in my inbox. It is so fascinating. So thanks again for joining me on this episode of the Modern Health Nerd Podcast. Tune in next week for another super nerdy episode where we delve a little bit more into food tech. Until then, stay nerdy.